Welcome everyone to the SAMS members call, the last one we're doing in 2016, and it's actually for the new year 2017. So wishing everybody a wonderful, happy, joyous, magical new year. As we close out 2016, we're here on New Year's Eve due to circumstances beyond our control. And yet also, I think it was a good thing because it allowed me to connect with some more information that we'll be sharing with you tonight. So it's all divinely orchestrated in some way. Also, we have a couple of announcements before we jump in, and that is that if you want to just let people that you know have access to this one call, we're offering it as a free gift to anybody who is on our newsletter list that is not a member. Of course, because the members already have it as a free call, we'll be sending that out probably in the next few days. And so if you know people who you think might benefit from being able to listen to this call, have them sign up for our newsletter. They can go to shamanicastrology.com. At the very top of the page, on the very first page, there's a boom bar with a link to sign up for our newsletter. So we'd love to just extend our reach. And if you can help us with that, we would love that.
Yeah, and so also to all the members that are getting this call, please feel free to share this with your friends too.
Yeah, exactly. So Daniel, you want to talk about the events that are coming up?
Well, I just wanted to just make a couple of quick announcements because our events page is not in completely updated with all the latest information. I just did want to share that for those that are maybe planning ahead, the three international events that are on the docket for 2017 are definitely going to be happening. There's a basic script and archetype course in Bali. So anybody who wanted to go to Bali or is in Asia or in Australia, we're doing it there on the 23rd to the 29th of April. It's a slightly longer course so that there's time to do some things other than just classwork. And then Anya and I are doing our fourth annual Renaissance of the Sacred Feminine journey this year to Wales and back to Wiltshire and Avebury for crop circle season, July 30th through August 9th. That's definitely happening. And then also we're going to be having an official SAMS event on cosmology, night sky, at the megaliths of Portugal. And that's going to be around the time of the autumnal equinox and on the coast of Portugal from the 20th to the 26th of September, also a slightly extended in time event. So there is plenty of time to be on the land and go to the ancient sites. So just keep that in mind when you're planning ahead if you want to do something a little bit more exotic. that's in addition to our upcoming webinar on the relationship and sacred marriage material beginning in February. So,
just for people to know, that sacred marriage and relationship class that we're doing, it's the first time we're doing it online, and it is our most popular. People love this class because it's content you will not find anywhere else. So if you're thinking about it, we'd love to have you join us. And I think there's an early registration special until early February, so you might want to jump on that. So you want
to let me dive in the way I always like to on when I'm doing the monthly calls, to look at what is happening with the visible planets. And to then do just a little bit of summary of the movement of the planets over the next month. So beginning with Mercury, Mercury is at that point in its cycle where it will change to a different overtone and become a morning star. It becomes visible in the morning sky by around January 5th. And we'll have also in January its greatest elongation. I think that's January 19th or so. And Mercury, there's other things going on with Mercury, but it's definitely a morning star visibility beginning around January 5th. Venus.
Daniel,
Venus
can I
is
just
a.
say something about Mercury real quick? Because I think it was in somewhere I read that this is one of the best visibilities for Mercury in the morning smoke this year. And it is,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, it is greatest elongation on January 19th. It's 24 degrees from the sun, and that's a pretty good stretch. Sometimes it only gets 18. Just wanted to add that.
And also then, in, since it will be a feature of pardon me, our conversation as we go through our looking at this month, is that January 8 is when Mercury goes stationary direct, pretty much right at galactic center. More about that when we discuss the all planets in direct motion issue. Then Venus is, this entire upcoming month is going to be increasing in brilliance from up to its almost maximum brightness. So, and it's in the evening sky, and it's so high up in the evening sky that it won't set for 3.5 to 4 hours after sunset. And it increases in brilliance to minus 4.7 magnitude. It's not possible to miss it unless you just happen to be born living in a place that is clouded out every night.
Right.
And it also will have its greatest elongation on January 12th or so at 47 degrees away from the sun. Then we get to Mars, and Mars and Venus together is like one of the major events of January. More about that as we go through the month. But Mars, though, is dimming because it's actually slowly but surely on its way into its underworld phase in its cycle. And it starts, pardon me, it starts the month out at plus 0.9, way dimmer than Venus, and continues getting dimmer to plus 1.1 by the end of the month. But it's still, because of where it is in the evening sky, except when the moon is up there, there's nothing else bright around it. So you can't miss it as Venus and Mars. Actually, what's happening is Venus is leaping up to connect with a very, very slow movement of Mars toward the western horizon. Beginning in the first week of January and up until the first week of March, then Venus and Mars are going to be within 10 degrees of each other. So you can actually find out by yourself by using the fist technique, you know, like hold your arm up with your closed fist. And that's about 10 degrees. You'll see Venus and Mars touching either end of your fist. Then we get to Jupiter, which rises around midnight, and it's also increasing in magnitude from minus 1.9 to minus 2.1. And it's also in a portion of the sky where you cannot miss it. It's for those who are early risers, Jupiter is one of the great wonders of the morning sky right now. And then Saturn, which is bright, definitely, but it stays about the same, plus 0.5, meaning considerably brighter than Mars, or somewhat brighter than Mars, but way dimmer than Jupiter, and even more way dimmer than Venus. But definitely, bright enough to say, hey, that's Saturn. And it will be in January rising as a morning star. December was it was mainly invisible in the underworld, but Saturn is now rising in the morning and becomes part of morning sky events now. Just several other notes. There will be, in 2017, we talked about this on our solstice call, 3 Jupiter-Spica conjunctions, and the first of these is actually going to be happening in January 20th or so, is the first of the 3 that happened, Jupiter conjunct Spica, and Spica being right there around 22, 23, 24 Libra. And those that have been following this material know that that area of Libra, Aries, Capricorn, 20, 21, 22, and in there is really a major front lines part of what's happening in 2017. So now let's look at the way the planets are moving from New Year's Eve until February 1st or so. Mercury, as we mentioned, will go stationary direct around the, I don't have the exact minutes it happens, but around January 8th, depending on what time zone you're in. And that it will be, like right now, Mercury is 4 Capricorn, but it's going to keep retrograding back to 28 Sagittarius and then go direct. And then by the beginning of February, it'll be at 20 Capricorn. So it'll start moving quickly and reach 20 Capricorn by February 1st. Venus begins the year at around 27 Aquarius. And by the 1st of February, it'll be around 28 Pisces. So it moves slightly more than a whole sign from late Aquarius to near the end of Pisces. Mars begins the year at about 946, 947 Pisces, and it is going to move forward, entering into Aries later in June, later in January, and then by February 1st will be almost to 3 degrees Aries. So Mars is actually going to cross over the equinox point, the vernal equinox, spring equinox point in the northern hemisphere. Jupiter begins at 2102 Libra and will reach, it's kind of like it's still moving pretty fast through Libra, up to 23 Libra by February 1st, and then will actually reach its retrograde point on February 5th. And so that'll be a February event when Jupiter goes retrograde. Saturn moves from 21 Sag to about 24 and a half Sag over the month of January. Uranus continues to have a pretty strong forward motion from 2033 Aries at the beginning of the year to 21 Aries 02 in February 1st. Neptune begins the year at 942 Pisces, and for Neptune jets ahead to 1038 Pisces. So it's actually moving about a whole degree in January, amazingly. And also Pluto is moving pretty quickly, actually moving more than 1 degree in the month of January, from 1654 Capricorn through 1759 Capricorn. Those are about as fast as those two planets can move. And then the nodal axis begins the year at 437 Virgo, 437 Pisces. It continues this slow retrograde motion. And by February 1st, it's 326 Virgo, 326 Pisces. North node is the one that's in Virgo. Chiron stays in direct motion the entire month from 21 Pisces, 04, in the beginning of the year, moving more than 1 degree, up to 2219 Pisces. And actually, of all the different objects that shamanic astrology will use, and I mean, Eric is the one who's sort of our resident Vesta expert. I myself don't feature it too much in my own work, but it is the only thing which is retrograde, actually. I mean, the entire month of January, it's moving from 2 Leo back to 24 Cancer. So that's just to give an overall flavor for those of you who are following along with this. And remember that when I highlight degrees, particularly of the outer planets, oh my gosh, that should then spark your own curiosity as to whether or not you yourself have degrees near that. You know, those that have prominent Libra, well, this is a Jupiter time for you. Those of you that the Aries degrees, you know, the, in 2021, 22. I mean, this is, you're right on the front lines of this. So there's ways of taking this information and using it to get an understanding and to get insights about what's happening in the world. But clearly it also has reference to your own charts and your own life process and what cycles you're in. And that's one of the things we invite you when you come on these calls in person that you can ask about, you know, near the end of when Kaylin and I have finished riffing about the month. I want to just make one last thing here before we actually dive into more specifically the events of each days of the month. We're not going to be talking about every day of the month, but, you know, the major things with the full moons and the new moons and some of the other major aspects. Is I just came upon something rather intriguing. It's like a sort of a cultural understanding that that has happened historically, particularly for those that work with the moon. And it's this understanding that in a good lifetime, you know, I mean, it's if you live a good long, you know, less than 100 years, but, you know, if you make it to your Uranus return or the third Saturn return, you will experience approximately 1,000 lunations in a lifetime. So that kind of gives you a sense of the time span, so that when you have an experience of one new moon to the next new moon, or one full moon to the next full moon, that's one lunation, and you get about 1,000 of them. So you don't want to miss one, right? I mean, that sounds like a lot, but it's also like a number that is that you can't have a kinesthetic relationship with. So let me. Am I still being heard, Kaylin?
Yes, Daniel, you sound great.
Oh, okay, good. So let me turn it over to you to begin our journey from January 1st. You might actually, there's something happening even the 31st and the 30th was that Saturn Chiron thing. You might want to mention.
Right, Saturn and Chiron are an exact square right now, and will be most of the month, actually. They don't move far from that. And so that's happening. And if we think about Saturn as a new form and Chiron is about the what it takes to heal, what it takes to turn, you know, wounds or things that hold us back or whatever our challenges may be into our medicine, then those two working together could be pretty profound opportunity for us.
Yeah, we were referencing this in our look ahead at the whole year of 2017. And you, for those who have that, you can. I don't want to. We have so many things to talk about this month.
Right.
I'm not going to completely reiterate all of it, but it does. It's one of the aspects that does take us back, just like the Uranus-Pluto relationship, to the late 60s, because that was the last time when Chiron was in Pisces. There's a lot of different research and work that's been done on that regarding how, you know, what music and you know, plant medicine and different ways of experiencing ecstatic states went into the cultural revolution that was happening at that time. And with Saturn square, it continues onward now. You know, where on one hand you have an administration coming in and many parts of the world that are even more anti-drug than they've ever been, and anything to get people into altered states. And then the way in which in the United States, in many states, there's like an opening to openness to those kinds of things. Anyway, but it's setting up kind of a Saturn confrontation in some ways, and there'll be some kind of continuing confrontation on that in 2017.
Indeed. So something else to just be aware of is that there is a second being added at midnight at this time, and that has to do with the fact that actually, according to Earth Sky, and I posted this on the SAMS Facebook page, so if you haven't had a chance to see it, you can go check it out there. But they've been adding seconds. It's 26 times since 1972. They call them leap seconds to keep the calendar, to keep the clock in alignment with whatever it is supposed to be. And I also talked about how 1 million seconds is like 12 days and a billion seconds is 31.7 years and a trillion seconds is 31,709.8 years. So it just gives you a concept of, like Daniel was talking about, how 1,000 lunations, we can really get a mind around that. But, you know, when you look at a billion seconds or a trillion seconds, it's like, wow, that's a lot to take in, how much that really is, if we're looking at it from the seconds point of view. The other thing that's happening is that at midnight, the Sirius, the brightest star in our sky, is on the meridian. It's, you know, near the highest point in the sky that it can be, like sending a direct beam of light down to the Earth at that time as well. And so even Earth sky now, I remember I talked about this for years in celestial timings, and now I'm seeing Earth sky talking about this phenomenon as well. And you can also connect with on the Facebook page, the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School Facebook page, a link that talks about more on that as well. So we've got that happening. And then also, as we start the new year, we're going to have the first Venus-Moon conjunction at the sixth gate, sixth chakra, we're kind of completing this particular Venus cycle already at the sixth chakra, and working with vision. How are we visioning our new year? And that is going to be exact at 11:59 p.m. Pacific time on Sunday the 1st. Or it'll be really early in the morning at like 2:59 a.m. Eastern time. And, of course, you can adjust for your time zone on January 2nd. So it's kind of spilling from the 1st to the 2nd that we have that going on. And so it's just an opportunity to think about how this is what it is that we're wanting to vision here at a new year. It kind of actually fits with the theme of the new year, to have Venus at this gate.
I'll just mention that just due to the fact that this is happening right at the beginning of the month, the result of that is that we have in the month of January two Venus gates. And I know you'll talk about that part of it more later, but I want to bring in that due to the way in which Venus and Mars are getting closer together, it does turn out that in January, there's also one of them on January 2nd and one of them on January 31st, the major points in the Mars cycle. So in the Mars synodic cycle, the sixth labor of Mars is on the 2nd of January or so. And it depends, again, you know, like what evening sky, you know, when evening is and when they're, you know, depending on what part of the world you're in. And then January 31st. So what's happening is that having two Mars labors and two Venus gates in the same month, and both essentially happening at the same time, because when you see the moon with Venus, Mars is really close. When you see the moon with Venus later in the month, Mars is really close. And I think that's a pretty marvelous significator of what's coming through regarding this current Venus-Mars conjunction that is a dominant feature through January and also February.
Yes, beautiful. And then, of course, also, you know, a few hours later, after the Venus-Moon conjunction, Venus will move into Pisces. So this Venus-Moon conjunction is happening at the very latest degrees of Aquarius, one of the most visionary signs of the 12 in terms of, you know, the big picture, cosmic overview, grand vision aspect at the sixth gate, at the gate of that has to do with the our own maybe our personal vision or how we're connecting into a larger vision as well.
And the sixth labor of Mars is at 11 Pisces. Just, you know, a few hours, essentially just some hours later. So just as Venus is about to go into Pisces, Mars is already in Pisces. with the moon and, you know, essentially passing both of them. By the way, this is easily visible. It's 58, 59, 60 degrees above the horizon. So it's not hard to be tuned in to that particular planetary dance. And, you know, Kaylin, one of the things is that's also bringing into emphasis the star Fomalhaut.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
Right below the configuration. So it's like one of the four royal stars that anciently marked the four directions, as well as having many other powerful meanings to people around the world, including Native Americans. There were certain stars that marked the quadrants. So you can see it there with working with the conjunction with the sixth labor of Mars. And just put in a plug there also that Eric and I in our Mars class are going to be going over the sixth and seventh labor of Mars in our upcoming teleclass series that's happening next week.
Awesome. So because the way that the moon is traveling along the ecliptic, it's going to occult Neptune and then Mars on January 2nd. So we've got a lot happening just in the first couple of days, the first 3 days or so of the new year.
You're kind of an occultation specialist, and there's these whole sequences of the moon occulting major stars that kind of are a overall seasonal effect based on the overall lunar cycle. But the moon occulting a planet is a much rarer event, and the fact that that would be happening in the beginning of the year. And did you? I don't think we mentioned that this is all the stuff we're talking about is like in this first week, which is the most exact planetary conjunction in what was it, 30 years?
30 years. It's actually happening today, I think. The moon and.
Yeah.
Is it the moon and
Mars
Neptune?
Mars and Neptune.
Mars and Neptune, yeah. The closest. Two planet pairing in 30 years, according to Sky and Telescope.
You're not going to be able to see Neptune, but they're so close that if you see, when you look at Mars tonight, I guess, that at 9:44 Pisces, the closest pairing of Mars and of any two planets in 30 years, and that's certainly a the occultations or such close pairings where the planets essentially almost touch each other. I mean, these are portals. These are exact lineups. It's like super Mars Neptune conjunction, you know. not just any old Mars Neptune conjunction.
Indeed. And that's why, because they're so close together, they won't have moved that far apart. By January 2nd, the moon catches up to them and occults them both because they're so close together. So it's really, we could say, starting now with their conjunction.
And then last but not least, as far as this the first week of the year, there's also that point that happens every year where the Earth is at perihelion, where the yep. Earth is the physical Earth in because the orbit of the Earth is not an exact circle. It's just slightly ellipse, and so there's actually over its long cycle. I don't mean the 26,000 year cycle. I'm not talking about a 41,000 year cycle, which is the cycle of the obliquity of the ecliptic, but a different cycle. There's points where the Earth will be closer or further than away from the Sun at different seasons. You know, so now basically the Earth is at perihelion in the winter of the northern hemisphere and the summer of the southern hemisphere, but it's not always that way.
Right. You know, and something that's really interesting that I'm just kind of noticing right now as we're looking at this is that we've got the Earth closest to the Sun, and then Mercury really looks like it's within like a degree of the galactic cross. The center point of the galactic cross is zero Capricorn point.
Yes.
from the second to then it goes back into Capricorn on the fourth, on the day that we have the perihelion, goes back into Sagittarius, but still really close within a degree of that galactic cross, and which is above, right at the place of galactic center. So, and in its retrograde, it's like it's going back to get deeper information, deeper insight, deeper perspective that's taking place, like pulling that arrow back on the bow just to get to create greater power as it moves forward. After it goes direct on at actually 1:43 a.m. January 8th in Pacific time is when it's going direct. So, and I have to say I'm going to be glad about that. I do like Mercury retrograde for some things, but oh my God, technology! I just struggle with it when it's retrograde.
Well, I have to say that I was participating with you with that yesterday.
Yes. I've learned to roll with it pretty well, but it's like, oh, not really again.
Yeah. Okay, so as moving forward, as we move toward the full moon, I really love the January full moon. We could call it the Cancer full moon, the one that happens when the full moon is when the sun is in Capricorn. It is technically possible that it could happen in late December, but most of the time it is in January. And this particular moon, I really love this one. It's like my two favorite full moons, and the ones that have the greatest significance in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School are this one, because it was at this, what I call it, the Magi moon. It's the one associated with Epiphany in the Christian tradition. Is when the most powerful original transmission of shamanic astrology came through in the early 1980s under the Cancer full moon. I think it was actually even on January 12th back then. And the other one is the Aquarius full moon that happens usually in late July or sometime in August, the Vision Quest full moon. So the Magi full moon is really the one that most has to do with the knowledge and the wisdom teachings that are associated with astrology, actually, the greater cosmology and how it connects to world events. But that's not the only thing happening. I mean, that full, right surrounding that full moon window, the Magi full moon, which I don't have the exact timings on that, Kaylin. What it will be for you locally?
3:34 a.m. Pacific time is the exact full moon on the 12th.
On the 12th, yeah. Okay, thanks. Just preceding that, we have the, on the 11th, is the quadrature, the Sun square Uranus. And just, I think, just following
on
that.
On the 10th, it's square Uranus at 8:21 a.m. And then
on the 10th. And then also you have the Jupiter square Sun.
Yeah.
Quadrature, or the morning quadrature. So, and you can see why that would be happening, because there's that, one of the most dominant features of 2017 is the Uranus-Jupiter relationship. In January 20 Capricorn Aries through 22 Capricorn Cancer, and so we have the because there's the full moon at 22 Cancer opposite the Sun at 22 Capricorn, then falling into that same energetic window is the Sun square Uranus and Jupiter square the Sun. So that's an incredibly intense portal also.
Right, and the Sun will have been with Pluto on the 6th, so just a few days before that, because that's all Pluto's also involved, although not as far along the degrees, so it's happening a little sooner. But, yeah. And then,
so it's as if the full moon is completely accenting and bringing out the strongest energies of the Jupiter-Uranus relationship.
Yes, and also that day, interestingly, is conjunct Neptune. So we're talking about today, the Mars conjunct Neptune, But on that moon, Venus catches up to Neptune. So that gives us a clue about how close Venus and Mars are getting together and how they're both getting some kind of insight or inspiration or download from Neptune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, just as we had mentioned the significance of this great star, Fomalhaut, in its involvement with the Mars-Venus relationship and the Moon in the beginning of this month, beginning of January, there's another star that has tremendous significance in 2017, and we'll see this clearly in the evening sky. In the relationship between Jupiter and the star Spica, the great star in the Priestess constellation, which historically is the constellation most associated with the sacred feminine. And so we have this in and of itself is like a shamanic astrology teaching of being able to see Jupiter, in the sign of Libra, but actually situated right in the middle of the body of the Priestess. And that expansive Libran energy expanding everything we could possibly know and tune into regarding the star that's right in the center of the Priestess constellation, right in the center of her body, which in many traditions, Spica is the primary star of the mysteries of the sacred feminine. And that star is pretty much a stellar stand-in for the planet Venus.
Indeed. Yes, and just so in case people are listening, and then, you know, here's the short form on that, because Jupiter is in the part of the sky where the sun is after the equinox, the September equinox, and so the signs are related to the seasons, and the constellations are the backdrop that the seasons move through. So that's what Daniel's referring to when he's talking about the difference between the two. It's very clear to see in the sky. And another important star is Aldebaran in the moon, because there's a series of occultations, 49 of them from January of 2014 to September of 2018. So we'll be having the 27th occultation on January 9th. And occultations are, as Daniel was saying, portals, or they accelerate what is being held in consciousness, or, you know, how we're showing up to be a part of that, or what particular downloads may be available to us at that time. So,
well, just like if it was a new moon, you know, we call it a super new moon, you know, so we have the moon with that star in an occultation, and that's like, you know, super Aldebaran.
Right. And it's not going to be visible in the U.S. because it's happening at 6:26 a.m. So, that would be, and so that means Aldebaran's probably not even in the sky at that time, or the moon in the sky at that time, but it's still happening, and we can definitely tune into the effects of that.
I mentioned briefly before that one of the biggest features of January, but also extending into February, is the time period in the Venus-Mars saga, when in the evening sky we see Venus and Mars together. And that's happening from the first week of January until early March. In some ways, you know, if you just use a 10-degree orb, there's two lunations. But this lunation that is happening January 2nd and 3rd, you know, going where we have the sixth gate and of Venus and the sixth labor of Mars happening, you know, with the moon. I don't know. I mean, if we don't need to be, I think, so rigid about the 10 degrees. I mean, maybe there's three lunations in this time frame when Venus and Mars are seen together, you know, as part of the great saga.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. And if we look at January 31st, Sky and Telescope is saying that's when they're the closest. During this month, it's like they're only 5.5 degrees away from each other, and then that's the second lunation mm-hmm. of of the moon and Venus.
If we include, and then there's a third one that happens early, you know, first, I think March 1st.
Well, it's February 28th for Venus and March 1st for Mars. Yeah.
Right, right. So that would be. I'm going to bring this up to Eric when I talk with him in our class. But I want to, just as staying within the framework of the Great Saga, long evening and short morning. Particularly since it's going to be so striking in the evening sky in the next couple of days. Maybe it is three lunations with Venus and Mars that close together.
Yes. They'll definitely still be pretty close. I mean, visually, it's going to look pretty close.
Indeed.
So, yeah.
I think inaugurates this. Whatever this Venus and Mars combination is it moves from late Aquarius to all through Pisces, and then the culmination of it is that in early Aries, getting ready for the new Venus cycle. In March at the vernal equinox.
Indeed.
So what could happen with these two planets visible? Please remember, I mean, a chart of the U.S. inauguration is going to have Venus and Mars up there conjunct in the evening sky in Pisces.
Right, and Saturn square Mars.
No, I'm not entirely. I'm not going to. We're not like speculating on what's going to happen. But from a psychological/spiritual perspective, when Venus and Mars are together in the sky like that, it is actually one of the visible symbols of a sacred marriage, of the union in both men and women of the. Of the leading edge, the overtone archetypes of Venus and Mars, and so I mean January, February is the synthesis between the inner sacred marriage of the Leo goddess and the Sagittarian god.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those of you that have no idea really what I'm talking about that are first time listeners here to this information. That is why we've created in the school these more extended teleclasses, more in-depth teleclasses regarding the importance of the 584-day Mars Venus cycle and the 26-month Mars cycle, which is reaching a really important point in about how they come together visibly in the sky, and that would be a feature of the time frame in late January. So if we move ahead to, as we move through the latter portion of the month, in the sky, I mean, kind of like we're talking about what would be in the evening sky, the last quarter moon on the 19th, this is at dawn, the dawn on the 19th, Jupiter and the moon, last quarter moon, and Spica form a very close triangle. And that's you know, so we have the moon with Spica, the first Jupiter Spica, the first of three. Now I mentioned that earlier, but then the moon is going to form a nice little tight triangle. You know, that's kind of a signature of that time frame.
Yeah, you know, if we think of the moon as a transmitter, it just it's. Amplifying what the transmission already is that's coming in, because Jupiter is very expansive and the light codes the information that comes from Spica as the star of the divine feminine, the primary star, the stand-in for Venus. So it's quite an interesting lead up to that inauguration time.
In discussions I've had with our astronaut friend Gemini Brett, who's spent a lot of time working on the stellar alignments in Washington, D.C., Spica has a major part to play. Some say even the Statue of Liberty, I know it's not Washington, D.C., but was connected with the Priestess constellation and the star Spica. And there's alignments with Spica in Washington, D.C. So, I mean, the fact that Spica shows up so prominently with Jupiter, I think does have significance to the fate of the United States of America.
We can hope that it's a good fate.
And then that leads us up to the Aquarius new moon, January 28th, which then brings, you know, that's that whenever there's a new moon, and in this portion of the Venus and Mars cycle, that means only a few days later will be the seventh labor of Mars and the seventh chakra gate in the Venus cycle.
Right, right. And it's this is now the way that the Chinese track their new year. Not the way they used to do it, but now it's how they do it. So yeah. It'll begin new Chinese year as well, the year of the rooster.
Ah, I'm too bad I don't have, I'm not living in the place where the roosters are all around me. Because I'm sure that, pardon me, we'd be hearing them right now.
I'm sure, I know. That's so great.
Oh yeah, the rooster. Big. That's going to be, I think, amazing in the out here in the Far East. You know, the year of the rooster. Well, this is rooster land for sure. Yeah. Okay. So maybe now would be the time for us to discuss this fascinating phenomenon of all planets direct.
Yes.
Now, let's place this into a certain context. Most everyone, even when they just initially get into astrology, one of the first things they hear about is retrograde, and particularly Mercury retrograde, which has quite a reputation. We're going to be doing a whole Mercury class next week. I forgot to mention that. Right?
Yeah.
Kayla? Yeah. So we'll be discussing this in more depth during our Mercury teleclass regarding the way that we in shamanic astrology view retrogrades, and particularly Mercury retrograde. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that a lot of attention is placed on retrogrades. I even have clients that will say, God, I've got six planets retrograde, you know, and then I'll have to tell them that, well, four of them are retrograde more than almost half the year, you know. So it's the ones that really matter are the inner planets, not the outer planets. But my point being that a lot of attention is placed on retrogrades. But then there's this fairly rare phenomena. It happens way less number of days on average than the number of days that Mercury itself is retrograde every year. And that's these rather unusual times. Some years it never happens. I think the most I ever saw was in some of the research here is about 60 days or so that it can happen. That every planet through Pluto, and we tend to throw Chiron in also for sure, every planet including through Pluto, including Chiron, a time frame when they're all direct, no retrogrades whatsoever. And that comes up from January 8th until February 5th. I mean, the time, it's a fairly long time, including the time of the inauguration. All planets direct. what could this mean? Actually, one of our former students and members of the school has done research on this. And we're just starting to note it. And I'd like to offer a possible framework on it. I'm not trying to say that I conclusively know what it means. It's taken a long time to be able to get insights that are different than the mainstream scary view about Mercury retrograde. So what about all planets direct? So just a couple of musings on this. What has been one of the most prominent stories recently in the last number of weeks? It's been this whole issue about fake news. which is heavily promoted by the mainstream media. You know, there's like whole websites that say these are the news sources that are fake news. They all comes from, you know, Russian propaganda or something. You'd be amazed what's included on those lists. Yet those of us that have some awareness realize that the main source of fake news is the mainstream media. and they're beginning to now talk back or pull back their you know, so we, well, maybe we took this too far, you know, now people are looking at us. But anyway, the reason why I think this might have something to do with the phenomena is that Mercury retrograde, kind of the icon of all retrogrades, is a time period to get us to question our assumptions about the way cognition, perception, and communication operates. For many people, Mercury retrograde is a time to say, well, this is great. I don't have to worry about what's happening in the outer world. My assumptions about how the way the world works, including technology, that's suspended right now. We can do inner work. We can do our real work. We can do spiritual practices. I think those of us that have Mercury retrograde, like myself, enjoy this opportunity more than others that are relying on the alleged linearity of our reality. So Mercury, the way we look at retrogrades, including the retrogrades of the other planets, is definitely not seen in that good, bad, right, wrong, it's all Mercury retrograde. I mean, it's something bad. I mean, we do have to take it into account. But we can't assume that the way cognition, perception, and communication is the way we were trained to believe that it is. So Mercury retrograde is a time period to take that into account and reconsider it as a new Mercury is being birthed. So January 8th, Mercury, stationary direct at galactic center as the inaugurative shift, so that all the planets now are direct. All the others, no other retrogrades until February 5th. So what do all planets direct possibly mean? Does that mean that we would then project onto it all good, all wonderful, all tremendous? I would say that would be as big of a mistake as looking at Mercury retrograde as something negative. When I was puzzling about this, it occurred to me that when all planets are direct and highlighted by the Apollonian morning star phase of Mercury at galactic center, 28 Sag, and then spending the rest of January in Capricorn, at the transmission point, as Kaelin mentioned, on the cross, that it's a time period, our best time frame in a long time, of breaking through the illusion of the matrix. basically having the courage to speak the truth about what we know is not true, and having the courage to find out for ourselves what is true, without the distraction of having some planet going through its birth crisis. You know, like if Mercury or any of the other planets are retrograde, they're actually in a birthing time frame. But now they're all birthed. You know, they're all out here in direct motion. So what a tremendous time period to be able to break through and see where the illusions are. Anyway, that's what I'm, as a preliminary insight, and I want to clearly, you know, activate that understanding or that imaginative process, that inquiry, and those who are listening to the to this, and we try to tune into what January is about. I mean, obviously, all this stuff we've been looking at, January is just like off the scales. I mean, the amount of stuff. I mean, if you could take any one of these things we've talked about, from the Magi moon to the occultations to having two labors of Mars and two Venus gates in the same month, and then the world events that are transpiring all around this. And then the opportunity with All Planets Direct to attempt to discern where the illusion and the unreality is.
So along these lines, just something to keep in mind is that, of course, President-elect Donald Trump will be inaugurated on the 20th of January, and that's in this window of All Planets Direct. And so I got curious, and I went back and I looked to see other presidents that have been inaugurated at this time. I wasn't able to do an extensive thing, but it's interesting there. And of the 44 presidents we've definitely had, and the 45th president that we're about to have, there's only been 2, 4, 6, 7 times in the last, since we started inaugurating presidents, that they were inaugurated in a time when all the planets were direct. And I didn't include Chiron in that. If Chiron was retrograde, I counted it as a time when they're, because Chiron didn't even come into the story until 1977. So I counted that as a time. So the first time it happened was in 1821 when James Monroe was inaugurated for his second term. The next time it happened was William Harrison. He's the ninth president, and this was 1841, so 20 years later. And this is when they were inaugurating presidents on March 4th. That it changed to January 20th in 1920 or 1930, sometime in there, where they changed when they were doing it. So, William Harrison only lived a month after he was inaugurated. He died on April 4th, he died on April 4th. His wife, this I thought was really interesting, his wife Anna was too ill to join him in Washington for the inauguration, so the daughter-in-law served that function. And, can kind of see maybe something playing out a little bit like that. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then the 11th president, James Polk, inaugurated March 4th, 1845. This was the first inauguration that was covered by telegraph and was illustrated in a major newspaper, the London Times. And he only served one term. Of course, Harrison didn't even serve a whole term, and Monroe was in his second term when it happened that all planets were direct during the inauguration. Then President Franklin Pierce was inaugurated March 4th, 1853. He only served one term, and he was also born with all planets direct. So not only was he inaugurated when all the planets were direct, but he was born with that. And there's only 5 presidents that have had all planets direct when they were born. And so now for him, his vice president died within a month or so after he was inaugurated, and they didn't get another one. Apparently that office stayed vacant while he was there. So that was just interesting to note. Then our 40th president, Ronald Reagan, was all planets were direct when he was inaugurated in his second term on January 21st, 1985. And one of the things that he's noted for was that his second inauguration cost $15.5 million of taxpayers' money, most expensive inauguration to that point. And he was awarded the Golden Fleece Award for wasting taxpayers' money for doing that. And then Bill Clinton.
And he was nearly killed.
Yes, he was nearly killed, right. And of course, Abraham Lincoln was born with All Planets Direct, and he was assassinated at the start of his second term. But it wasn't at a time when all the planets were direct when he was inaugurated. Anyway, Bill Clinton, 42nd president, his second term was when all planets were direct, when he was inaugurated. And he was the first one to have his presidential inauguration streamed live on the internet. And he was also impeached by Congress. and then acquitted by the Senate as he so he was able to complete his term of office. So interesting, just to note that. And then, of course, Donald Trump will be the next one. So 2, 4, 6, 7. He would be the 7th president to be inaugurated in All Planets Direct. Bill Clinton was also born with All Planets Direct, and he was inaugurated second term with All Planets Direct. And then George Bush was another one of the presidents that was born with All Planets Direct. So that's as far as I got. Maybe more to be researched on that later.
But mainly this is to spark further research and inquiry into this. And there's even further work that could be done about, well, what about what would happen in the very rare times when all planets are retrograde?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I was curious about that because sometimes there's a lot of planets retrograde, but maybe one or two of them aren't. So definitely, what's going on when all planets are retrograde? That would be very interesting. So we hope we inspire some of you out there to maybe start looking that up.
Well, then, let's open it up if there's any comments, any insights.
Right. I'm turning. *6 will put you in the queue, and we'd love, if you have a question, great. If it's a personal chart question in relationship to what we've been talking about, or not, or also anything that we've talked about, any insights that maybe have come up for you that you'd like to speak into, we'd love to hear from you. So again, *6 will put you in the queue, and I have somebody. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. I do have an observation, and I do have a question. Let me ask my question before I forget. Can you guys recommend a good astrology calendar or something that a moon lunar calendar?
We basically use there's several other ones that are similar, but in my own practice, I use the Jim Maynard astrological calendar with different sizes. There's really a small one. There's one that can also be used kind of as an appointment book, and then there's also a wall calendar that has all the timings and good information to track all of it from month to month, day to day.
Okay, thank you. I'll look for that on the internet, I guess. And also,
You can go to quicksilverproductions.com. That's the website, and you can get it from there. Sometimes your local bookstore will carry it, but if you want to just go direct, you can do that.
Okay, thank you.
And if you want to follow the astronomy at the same time, you can either get the hard copy, or they actually have a really good service of giving you the online one. It would be Sky and Telescope magazine. An additional thing, which is really great, that we recommend to our students and members, is the daily thing that comes free from Earth Sky.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. And also quite open-minded. I mean, it's not a rigid mechanistic astronomer, but if you want to know what's actually day by day, what's happening in the evening sky, or morning sky, it's really a good one too. Earth Sky.
Good.
EarthSky.org.
I use the app Sky Map, and there's another one called Sky View to kind of look at things. I go to work before the sun comes up, so I get to see some stars. I had an observation. I think it was the beginning of the week. I don't know the exact day, but I was looking, and there was the moon, and then there was Jupiter, and then there was Spica.
Yes.
And so I was looking. I was looking, thinking about Spica, and I was looking at that, and I wrote something that said Spica was always considered the lonely one, or the lone star, and it was just as important as the four royal stars to a lot of people.
Actually, modern so-called Vedic astrology, one of the sidereal systems, use Spica as the so-called prime fiducial, where they measure things out from it. I mentioned earlier that in so many mythic traditions, Spica, particularly when it had its conjunction with the moon in the springtime, February, March, April, and the time when it went into the underworld 5,000 years ago in August and now in October, it was a stand-in for Venus's journey in and out of the underworld. And then when Spica was with the full moon, it represented a whole other set of mysteries involving the sacred feminine, all associated with Candlemas, and associated with the pre-Christian deity of Bridget.
Oh, okay. Well, I know you were talking something about Spica was going to be prominent during this time of the inauguration, and I was thinking the Lonely One could be referred to the president or even the United States with what's going on.
I myself am not familiar with that particular attribution to Spica.
It was just something that came up inside of my meditation.
I see. Well, an even more lonely one, quite frankly, is Fomalhaut.
Yes.
I mean, Spica is surrounded by, if you have any kind of a clear sky, dark sky, is surrounded by a tremendously interesting a grouping of stars that are not... you wouldn't see them under a full moon so well, but they're not insignificant. There's that kind of a V-shaped formation in the constellation right above Spica, and virtually every one of those stars is associated with some element of the sacred feminine.
Yeah. Well, Fomalhaut is associated with the Archangel Gabriel, mm-hmm. and that's what the old archetype or the old Christianity thing was. God is what did he say? God is my light, or God is my strength. Mm-hmm. But Gabriel was also like the playful one,
and the messenger.
Yeah, and being from the South, that kind of relates to the Native American thing about the coyote, and so I find that interesting every time Fomalhaut kind of pops.
Yeah, the four royal stars that were in the Christian tradition. The further back you go. When they were the indicators of the four directions, that they would attribute Raphael, Ariel, and Gabriel, and Uriel to those four. One of them was not Spica. It was Regulus, Aldebaran, Antares, and Fomalhaut. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. That's great. Thank you for bringing that up, Rhonda.
Oh, it's just interesting to me. I just see all these correlations with the past and, you know, the religions and what's going on. It's almost overwhelming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Often more than almost.
in terms of everything we've been talking about, this statement just keeps popping into my mind. It's like, don't believe everything you think. really finding the truth, the essence of truth that's within us that isn't necessarily based on what we're thinking or believing.
So. Great. It's all mysterious, which makes it great.
Yes.
Great mystery.
Yes. Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you.
Whoops, sorry. So there's nobody else in the queue. I'll give you just a quick second, *6, to put you in. Otherwise, we'll just wrap up this call. And so I don't see anybody jumping in. So what I think I'll do is unmute everybody so we can say Happy New Year and goodbye.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It's already New Year here.
Right, Daniel's ahead of us.
Bye, everybody.
Bye,
happy
everyone. Happy New Year.
Thanks for your support. Bye. Bye.